I'm Steve Barnes. I am a senior writer, restaurant columnist, and theater critic for the Times Union.
Tell us about your exciting career as a food critic. What do you do?
Well, I'm not actually the food critic. The Times Union has always had someone who strives for anonymity and goes and visits a place and writes, does a formal write-up. I'm the restaurant columnist and blogger. Since 2006, I've been writing the Table Hopping blog, which at its peak was getting about 400,000 visits a month. It's declined a little bit now as things have changed, but it still is a very vigorous presence and remains one of the top two single author blogs at timesunion.com. Our Capital Confidential blog that covers state politics is written by multiple people and it gets more traffic, but restaurants is a busy topic, and a lot of people still come to visit Table Hopping. And I also have additional outlets as well that I've done. So I cover the industry as a beat, just like somebody who's in sports or covers the state politics or, you know, our business desk. I cover restaurants as a beat, openings, closings, and Table Hopping is not, you know, oh, where do I go find the best pasta puttanesca or mocha cheesecake? That's not what I do. You know, I really cover the trends, the surges, the changes, trying to keep track in the past year of everything that was going on with COVID, who was open, who was doing delivery, who was hibernating, that kind of thing. And it really keeps me extremely busy. Because there's both the daily news and churn and larger trends and topic stories.
And is that a typical division in daily journalism to have that kind of split between food writing and restaurant criticism?
Yes, because while in the old days when newspapers had huge staffs, you know, the theater critic could be kept separate from the theater reporter, and it still is at the New York Times and bigger places like that, because they want the critic to believe that they have some insularity, that they're not calling up a producer or a director or an actor and saying, hey, talk to me for my feature story that I'm writing, when I've already dumped all over you and said you're a terrible director. So that division is possible and ideal at bigger institutions, but it is less possible. But unlike in the theater and movies and music and anything else, those don't change just because a critic is there. But when a restaurant critic walks in the door, a thousand things can change to make that meal increment, and they're recognized. A thousand things can change to make that meal better for them. You know, you can give them a better table, make sure they get seated, even if you have to take away somebody else's table who's running a little late. You can have the head chef put his or her eye on every single plate that's going out. You can select the most beautiful portion of fish. You can give them the very, very best server that you've got. And you can make sure they're well attended. You might even say, oh, just as a special this evening, we'd like you to try, you know, give them things. So you can make a restaurant dining experience markedly better because you know it's a critic. But an actor at a play is not going to say, oh, the critic's here, I'm going to try harder tonight. It doesn't work that way. And so it still is important that a critic have independence. And this way also, frankly, I can talk to people. I can have my face out there. I can be literally the face of Times Union food coverage. My face has been printed at the top of my blog for 15 years. And this makes me, in a small restaurant world, recognizable. And it's almost impossible for me to go into a restaurant and not be recognized. And, you know, it also causes things like in the supermarket, people will take a photo of my shopping basket so they can post it on social media and say, hey, look what we caught Steve Barnes from the Times Union buying. And this, I will admit, this does disincline me from buying Fritos.
Yeah. This all seems very glamorous as a writer, but there's a danger, isn't there? Didn't a disgruntled owner once put out a hit on you a few years back?
Well, I can laugh because it's completely ridiculous. Yes, the headline is a restaurant owner hired a mixed martial arts fighter to attack me, but it wasn't over a review. He was upset, thought I'd embarrassed him because I reported the truth that he was temporarily closed because he'd forgotten to renew his liquor license. And liquor license is simply mailing in the check and the form. And he just forgot to do it. But he thought that made him look dumb. So he told the staff a lie. He got found out. And such was his personality and temperament and acquaintances that he hired a pro MMA fighter to attack me. And it wasn't, I mean, it wasn't that bad, except as, you know, an affront to journalism. I had a black eye and I was beat up and I needed to get new glasses. I've lived on the edges of Albany, some of Albany's worst neighborhoods for 25 years. And the worst thing that ever happened to me ever in my life was getting my ass kicked in the parking lot of Stuyvesant Plaza, where they have stores like Peaches and Cream and Joseph A. Banks.
We're speaking with Steve Barnes. Amongst his many roles at the Times Union, he's a food writer. You're listening to Hudson Mohawk Magazine. I'm Steve Pierce. How did you get started as a food writer?
Well, I've always covered the arts. That's where I've been in journalism. It'll be 30 years this summer. And 2 years prior to that as an intern, I've always covered the arts and I continue to. The food thing came along because I grew up in a restaurant. My father had a restaurant in Schenectady from the mid-70s to the mid-80s called the Oxbow Inn. It was down on the very bottom of State Street near SUNY Schenectady. And so I grew up in the business and I had that background there. And my first newspaper job, I did occasional restaurant reviews when the regular critic was off. And then at the Times Union, I saw that, sure, the food stories might do restaurant trends occasionally, but the restaurant news was relegated basically to three little short items that somebody happened to send in the mail or via email that then appeared at the end of the restaurant review each week. You know, it's just like, hey, this opened, hey, he's doing a wine dinner, that kind of thing. And I knew there was a lot more out there. But the Times Union powers that be didn't understand back in the early 2000s when they were handing out blogs to everybody that a restaurant blog could sustain. They're like, how can you find enough news? And I guaranteed them there was. And in the early years when I was really cranking things out and there was a lot less competition in terms of food coverage, I was getting every story. So I was posting anywhere between 12 and 20 times a day. And that was just blog posts. I was also writing stories. And then stories generate stories because people see things you put out and they say, hey, well, what about me? I've got an interesting story. And then you meet interesting people. And it tentacles from there. And it is, I mean, the restaurant industry in the United States was projected, at least for 2020, before 2020 happened, was projected to be a $900 billion a year industry. And for instance, it has something like 30 times the number of employees as the airline industry. And in all airlines, including cargo, there's about 17 carriers operating in the United States, and there's 600,000 restaurants. So the airlines are too big to fail, and the restaurants, in many cases, are too small to save. There's a lot out there. There's just a vast world that there is to cover. And, you know, as much as I love the arts, there's a sad fact that everybody needs to eat three times a day, or, you know, at least twice or something. Everybody needs to eat, but nobody has to consume the arts. Nobody dies if they don't hear Beethoven.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you, in your opinion, what's the essential role of a restaurant in our daily life? You talked about the broader view of the economy, but I mean, how does a restaurant figure in day to day? A good restaurant, you know, not just food that you eat because you'll die otherwise, but what's the gold standard?
Restaurants occupy niches throughout the 24-hour life cycle of a community, because you know you've got late night diners for cops or third shift workers or whatever, and you've got breakfast spots for people getting up early. You know, you've got lunch for people who used to have business lunches back in the pre-pandemic days, and then you've got dinner. And dinner can either be, you know, a couple of parents working late, picking up food on the way home, whether it's takeout or whether it's grab and go, prepared meals, or it can be just a quick bite. It couldn't be a stop before a show. It could be a celebratory meal. You know, maybe you're getting a burger before you go in to see something at the Times Union Center, or maybe you want to do 9 courses at Yono's because it's Valentine's Day or it's your 40th anniversary. Or so they really function in so many ways. And restaurants, because people, if they're not actually busier than they were 50 years ago, there's some debate about that, but they believe they're busier, and it has just become easier to have food that's made and prepared outside of the house and is easily available to you. So the restaurants serve many, many functions.
Thanks so much, Steve. I'll be looking for you in the newspaper.